Randy Harriton is standing by to tell you two stories in the series Voices from a Mighty Pen Project on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. The Mighty Pen Project was founded by Richmond best-selling author David L. Robbins, this in partnership with the Virginia War Memorial, to provide writing instruction to those who have experienced our nation's military events, either through their service or as a supporter of the military. Each of those involved in the Mighty Pen Project have a personal story to tell. The Mighty Pen Project teaches them how to tell it. Randy Harriton is here. He's going to tell you two stories. And Randy, before you start, let me ask you, these are personal stories that happen to you, and yet you're writing them in the third person as though they happened to someone else. Why?
Well, a friend of mine who got wounded pretty badly, I did this in his honor, but he named me Harry because he couldn't say Harriton to save his life. So, and we always addressed each other by our last names, so he just called me simply Harry. So I wrote my stories with the protagonist named Harry. Then the Harry is actually me.
And your equipment was a dog.
Exactly.
Tell us about the dog.
Well, I went through dog school at Fort Benning, Georgia, and our dogs were German Shepherds. They were scout dogs. They were trained not to be mean, but to work on the point of combat patrols. So we were the permanent point men on these combat patrols. That's one of the reasons that the units liked to get us so much, is they didn't have to put one of their people out front. They put us out front.
And what would the dog do?
The dog would alert to certain stimuli, whether it be airborne scents, sounds, smells. He could pick up booby traps, trip wires. A trip wire was made with piano wire. He could hear the music from that piano wire, from the least little breeze. The dogs were quite remarkable, and my dog never missed a trick, never missed anything.
And they wouldn't trip the trip wire themselves,
no,
would they?
He would stop and sit in front of it.
And warn you about it.
And warn me about it and not go any further. You couldn't throw him into that tripwire.
And I imagine he saved your life several times.
Many times. In fact, it's estimated that the dog saved up to 10,000 lives in Vietnam.
Wow. What is the title of your first story?
It's Quirt Alerts. My dog was named Quirt. It's sort of a funny name, but I found out later that Quirt is a riding stick out west. That's a quirt. He came from a kennel in Arizona, and his name was Quirt. So he was one of the few.
Here is Randy Harriton reading his story.
Quirt Alerts. He sits on his haunches in the middle of the trail, nose held high, bouncing like a fishing bobber, pointing to the left front. He looks back at Harry, but does not move, waits for orders. Harry's senses go into overdrive. Which way is the wind blowing? How hard? Is anything out of order ahead? A turned leaf, a tuft of grass, an overturned rock. A quick glance encompassing all of his surroundings provides no feedback. The jungle opens up ahead of him, a perfect place for an ambush. Harry gives Quirt the hand signal to stay. The dog will not move. His orders given, he sits tall and rigid, an occasional sweep of the area with his nose, analyzing. Having no cover, Harry, as casually as his internal tensions will allow, meanders back to the next man in line. At slightly above a whisper, he says, "Enemy personnel at 10 o'clock. Afraid of springing the ambush, Harry does not look back in the direction indicated by Quirt, but nonchalantly shrugs and looks around the jungle as if taking a break. He can feel the rifle bores pointed in his direction. Silent, deadly, waiting. He wants to flop on his belly and crawl away. His instincts tell him run, but he waits. Enemy personnel at 10 o'clock. Relayed back man after man, no ad-libbing, no changing the verbiage, repeating what is said until the sound dies out along the snake-like string of men stretching along the ridgeline. Waiting, the interminable wait. Beads of sweat run down Harry's back, pools forming in his armpits. Harry hopes the company commander is flanking the dinks and will turn the tables, taking the pressure from the front. He isn't sure how long he can maintain the subterfuge. Voices low and mechanical, louder with each new voice coming back up the line. Move out and engage the enemy. Harry knows that the company is under orders to engage the enemy, but walking into an ambush? Why doesn't he come up here and engage the enemy? Shit, shit, shit. He recalls Quirt, praises him, and again orders him to search. Quirt will not alert again on these people. He has done his job, at least as far as these people are concerned. Still, it is comforting having him out front. On shaky legs at a snail's pace, the column moves out, watching, scanning the tree line, moving no faster than necessary. Each step winding the jack-in-the-box, awaiting the monster's release. 100 meters. No one really wants to make contact, but this is the business they're in. The jungle opens up in a solid wall of fire. Harry and the others are caught in an ambush along their left flank. The noise is incredible. Heavy machine guns, AK-47s, RPGs, all aimed at the Americans and firing at once. Harry dives away from the guns. The ground slopes downward, providing some protection. Quirt, as trained, takes his place on Harry's left side and lays down as close to Harry as he can get, protecting, doing his job. The fighting is vicious. Harry goes through several magazines in a few minutes. Can't stop and conserve ammo. They keep rushing forward. He must continue firing or they will flank the unit on the right. Grass is being cut over his head and falling on him from the enemy fire. They have him bracketed. Boop, ping, boop, ping, boop, ping. The grenadier to his left is firing 40-millimeter grenades as fast as he can load them. Thank God for him. Helping to keep the enemy at bay. Troops down to the left of the line are giving it to Charlie in spades, but they are firing in the same direction as he and giving him no cover fire. Chacom grenade! On Harry's left side, just beyond Quirt, he can almost touch it, but can't. It lays there. No ticking, no sound. Just a gruesome, inanimate object lying in its own cloud of dust. Time stops. Boom! Quirt takes the blast. Slams into Harry and then almost as if in slow motion rolls over him. They both are suspended in air. He lands and does not move. Harry comes down with a grunt, loud whine in his ears. An NVA soldier, a good-looking young man with a fresh haircut and clean green fatigues, walks from the foliage, thinking he has killed Harry and the dog. He is wearing no hat and is looking over his shoulder, talking to other troops behind him. Harry puts 3 rounds into his chest, and he falls backward in a heap. Legs akimbo. He is lying there dead, no more than 5 feet from Harry. Harry must move. To Harry's amazement, Quirt rises, and on shaky legs assumes his place again on Harry's left side. Time to go. Harry and Quirt move down the mountain, then angle to the left in hopes of linking up with the rest of the unit. Harry sees movement and yells, "It's the dog handler," on hopes that it is his guys. And not the enemy. There's no answer. He moves closer and repeats, "It's the dog handler." This time a welcome voice says, "Come on in, we thought you were dead." Harry doesn't know how much time has passed. It seems like hours. The entire unit withdraws. Artillery is called, big guns, 155s and 8-inchers. The ground rumbles and shakes. Metal shards cut through the trees, cutting them in half as easily as a scythe through hay. Hell has been unleashed upon the Dinks. Even now, Harry has a certain admiration for the Dinks. What brave young men they must be. They know what's coming, yet they attack and endure Armageddon, a baptism of fire and brimstone. Firing stops and the unit moves to mop up. Pieces of human beings, but no whole bodies. They took them. The rancid smell of cordite, spent brass, plenty of blood, bandages. It's always the same. They try to make the victories hollow. No proof, no bodies. Always an estimation of kills. They killed one of us. It is absolute, not estimated. We have one KIA, shot through the chest, lying on his back in a pool of sticky red, already congealing, returning to the earth. Some wounded, but not bad. We won. Big fucking deal, we won. A resupply bird comes in and unloads water, ammo. Harry and Quirt hitch a ride back to base camp with the dead man zipped into a body bag. After landing, Harry prods Quirt. He will not move. Can't. He died on the way home. He had no more to give. There are two dead soldiers on this helicopter. The shock is instant and severe. Disbelief. Can't be. He was fine. Harry knew something was wrong. He knew. Harry dismounted and cradled a limp Quirt in his arms and begins to walk with him. His tongue hangs. His eyes are glazed. The crew on the helicopter look on, sympathy in their eyes, saying nothing. What can they say? It's more than a mile back to the War Dog area. Harry will not stop, will not rest. He pushes on to find Doc, the vet tech. Maybe he can help. It's hard to see through the tears, salty, bitter, leaving dirt trails on his cheeks. The heaviness is not in his arms, but in his chest. He thinks he will burst open and spill on the dusty, rotten ground. He wants to scream, run, run until the hurt stops, run until all this goes away, but his legs won't let him. They are no longer a part of him, but simply appendages to move him and Quirt over this godforsaken patch of earth. Doc meets him at the kennels, but Harry won't let him have Quirt. He slides down and sits against a wall holding him. The crying is over. He talks to Quirt as he always has, thanking him for his protection, his dedication and love for over a year. Time means nothing to Harry. He has no idea how long he's been there, but eventually relinquishes Quirt to Doc. A wound has opened that will never heal. Harry heads back for his hooch, alone for the first time in Vietnam. A short time later, the War Dog Provisional First Sergeant told Harry that the battalion commander of the unit he had worked with inquired about the soldier named Quirt. He wanted to give him a medal for his heroism during the battle. When informed that the soldier was a large German shepherd, the colonel simply laughed. Dogs were considered to be equipment, nothing more. A month later, Harry received a letter from one of his dear friends and fellow dog handlers assigned to the 25th Division near Saigon. He said he heard that a dog named Quirt was coming to the main veterinary center near Saigon for a necropsy and immediately knew who it was. There was only one Quirt. He told Harry that he met him at the landing pad and accompanied his body to the vet and stayed with him. Both his eardrums were completely gone, which Harry already knew. This happened in an earlier engagement, but not reported. Harry knew the Army would retire him for this, so he kept it quiet. He also had severe internal damage, mortal damage. He was given a proper burial, complete with headstone, in the War Dog Cemetery. Pete said a prayer over Quirt and wanted Harry to know that he was treated with respect. Another soldier laid to rest, gone to flowers. Goodbye, Quirt. Serial number 7, Alpha 907.
Thank you, Randy. Randy Harrington reading his story. Randy, you talk about the dog and the training. How did the dog get trained? Did you train him? Did somebody, an academy, train him?
We trained them ourselves. We met our dogs at Fort Benning, Georgia, and trained them for 6 months. And then we flew with the dogs over to Vietnam. So we became pretty much attached to that animal and him to us.
Who trained you to train the dogs?
We would get in a circle, and an instructor would be in the middle of the circle, and he would tell us what to do, and we would do that. So we had an instructor that knew what to do.
You're listening to Voices from the Mighty Pen Project here on the Virginia Voice. Randy Harrington is with me. Randy, the dog died in your last story. You have another story where the dog does not take part.
Exactly. This story is my lieutenant, who was my company commander, asked me to accompany him on a field trip. So that story is revolved around that field trip.
Go ahead and read that story.
Okay, the field trip. On Sunday morning, First Lieutenant Hostetler, the company commander, came into the hooch and asked Harry if he'd ride shotgun with him to visit some nuns. Harry and the lieutenant had gotten to know each other and spent time together discussing the evils of the world. The lieutenant was a Virginian, a VMI graduate, and a Catholic who seemed to know every nun in Two Corps. They loaded supplies of clothing, medicine, and soap, with the lieutenant driving and Harry with his M16 headed out to find the nuns. He had a map, and after an hour, they reached their destination. This place was poor even by Vietnamese standards. A cinder block building stood in need of repair in the middle of a fenced compound. A lecherous-looking, bent-over individual loped out, opened the gate, and waved them in. He stared up at them with head cocked and drool running from the corner of his mouth. The man didn't speak but made slurping sounds when he breathed. He was ugly and odious. His smile, however, was magnificent and genuine. "What kind of place is this?" "It's a leper colony. The sisters are friends of mine." "Wait, what? You brought me here with no forewarning? Hadn't lepers died out? Aren't they biblical abominations? Can we catch this stuff?" Harry was transported back in time as he looked at these people with this ancient disease. "Calm down, Harry. I wouldn't come here if it were contagious. They need our help." "They needed help, all right. The place was wretched. The people were gnarled, bent, and obviously had an objection to water. A pigsty with no pigs. The Vietnamese shunned these folks and considered them cursed, cast-offs. Not wanted in the cities or towns or villages. Even the place given them to live was third-rate, a stinky bog. Jesus embraced the lepers, but Harry could not be so gracious. He, however, now understood the biblical symbolism. They did have a cow, but she resembled the other inhabitants, a lanky thing with protruding ribs. She was a dowdy gray with long, skinny legs, bulging eyes with no cud to chew. Her udder, however, was large and reminded Harry of a skinny girl with large breasts. Her long, sad face expressed indifference. Harry didn't mingle. He stayed close to the lieutenant. The nuns were in full habit despite the heat. Those black and white outfits tugged up around their necks and hats pulled low made a stink sauna. They smelled no better than their charges. Surely God would have understood shorts and a t-shirt in this circumstance. The sister superior must have been very devout. Harry was relieved when it was time to go. The trip back was uneventful. The lieutenant told him that the sisters were from his hometown, and he felt a need to help them. Harry admired both the sisters and the lieutenant for caring for these poor rejected souls. His mother used to say there's a lid for every pot, and he was glad these good souls existed but didn't care to be one of them. A month later, the lieutenant asked Harry to accompany him to the leper colony. This time he said leper colony up front. Guess he didn't need to be so coy. Harry and the lieutenant loaded the supplies and headed out. This time Harry drove. The lieutenant found out that Harry had his military driver's license and insisted on being chauffeured. Harry chuckled to himself that he had been driven around by an officer in the first place. As soon as they arrived at the leper colony, the hackles went up on both of them. Something was up. No one came to the open gate. The cow was lying on its side. The tongue hanging from her mouth touched the ground. Cautiously, they opened the gate and entered the compound. The smell was still there, but there was the added odor of blood and death. Stillness greeted them, lifeless bodies arranged as only happenstance can do. God's final screw you to these miserable souls. The pale horse of death was traveling silently beside them as they made their way to the main building. Crouched and wary, Harry and the lieutenant worked their way through bodies, not stopping to check them. Ugly in life, grotesque in death. Some staring at nothing and others hiding their faces as if ashamed to have ever existed. Fauna in the distance moving, shaking, daring the two men to do something about the tragedy. They made their way to the block building where they found the two nuns. The unblinking eye of the window saw everything, but refused to comment. The nuns executed, shot at close range in the head. The blood was still liquid and chunks of gray matter littered the floor. They had missed the murders by only a few minutes. The lieutenant, repining, needed time to gather himself. He had just lost a couple of close friends, non-combatants, ladies of God. A senseless deed committed in a prehistoric rage that led to the unthinkable. Harry stood guard at the door, wondering why the flower of American youth was asked to fight and die for these people. This was not an enemy target. It was most certainly done by the compound's neighbors. No message was delivered here except intolerance. The trip back to the base camp was long and quiet. Harry's heart ached for the lieutenant. He was hurting. They drove in the stillness of death. Harry's only thought was, why did they have to kill the cow? In January 1970, Harry returned home and tried to assimilate into normal life. On the outside, he was the guy he'd always been, loving, carefree, easy to smile. The first one with the joke, but inside he had turned rock hard. Empathy had not returned with him. It lurked hidden back in that stinking jungle. His heart was a lump of coal, hard and black, with edges like knives cutting and slicing their way into his soul. He was alone, desperate. His wife allowed no talk about the war, her position being she had it rough too while he was gone, which was absolutely true. They attended couples therapy, but Vietnam wasn't mentioned. He had two beautiful children, a great job, in-laws whom he adored. Life was as good as it was supposed to be, or so it would seem. Harry was still lamenting the loss of that cow. Harry's mother-in-law was diagnosed with lung cancer in 1984 and died within 6 months. This beautiful woman simply wasted away and left them. He was sad and knew he'd miss her, but couldn't bring himself to tears. His attitude surprised everyone, even Harry. He wasn't rude or uncaring, but simply accepted the situation. He knew this wasn't normal. At the Chesterfield County Fair in 1986, with wife and kids and brother-in-law Bobby, he saw a crowd gathered around a misshapen, badly disfigured man on stage. He was an injured Vietnam vet named Dave Roever. He had been a riverboat gunner and was burned beyond recognition by a white phosphorus grenade. His lips had been reconstructed. His ears and nose were mostly missing. Yet he was full of life and presented his harrowing story with energy and humor. Afterwards, he invited all Vietnam veterans to join him on stage. Harry said absolutely not. He had been ridiculed enough and wasn't about to get on stage for another round of humiliation. Bobby, Harry's brother-in-law, literally pushed him to the foot of the stairs, encouraging him to go. Reluctantly, he ascended the stairs along with a half dozen other guys. Dave looked at the row of men and with a big gap-toothed smile said, "Welcome home. Thank you for your service." The crowd erupted with cheering and applause. All the men were taken aback. A mountain of a man stood on Harry's left and was crying like a baby. Harry was surprised that a 6-foot-4-inch man was acting this way when he realized that he, too, was crying. It was the first time any of them had been welcomed home or thanked. Harry cried that night, not for the cow, but for himself and all those human beings who were snuffed out one by one in a senseless act of ignorance. He could now grieve for them, the friends he lost, and himself. The healing could begin.
Randy Harrington reading his story, The Field Trip. Randy, you're part of the Voices of the Mighty Pen Project. You take part in the Mighty Pen Project, and many colleagues do as well, people who were in the Vietnam War and other wars. There seems to be a common thread running through it, and I don't know if you care to comment. Those who were in Vietnam seem to say, why?
Yes. It was our, I would say it was a lonely war. We were sent over there to fight. We thought we were doing something for the country. We answered our country's call. And yet we were shunned and ridiculed when we came home. They threw stuff at us. They yelled at us. As a matter of fact, when I came back through Fort Lewis, Washington, the last thing they told us was, you guys going through the big cities, Chicago, L.A., travel in groups because the hippies there will beat you up. And you could have heard a pin drop in that place. We were just devastated.
After what you had done.
Yes, and we thought, we're home. It's funny that being in Vietnam, home, I was from North Carolina at the time. Home was San Francisco. Home was Fort Lewis, Washington. Home was any place in this United States. And now that we were home, people were mad at us.
Again, as part of the Mighty Pen Project, you have these wonderful stories. How did the Mighty Pen Project help you bring out those stories?
Well, David L. Robbins, as you talked about in the beginning, is a best-selling New York Times author, and he's quite a teacher. He teaches at VCU and William and Mary, and he's quite a remarkable young man. He has an ability to provide you a safe place to tell these stories. And you're among other people that can share and empathize with you. And it's not meant to be cathartic, but it is.
That's what I was going to say, because I hear this catharsis coming out.
Yes, yes, and very much so. This is the first time I've ever told any of these stories. Never told another told these stories to anybody, my wife, my children, anybody.
Why?
It just seemed that people didn't want to hear it. They just weren't interested. And even the other Vietnam veterans were shy about sharing their stories with each other because of the reception we received when we came home.
Randy Harrington, thank you. You have been listening to another in the series of Voices from the Mighty Pen Project on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.